So again, welcome to the group, and I thought I'd start the recording because I'm going to give you a bit of an introduction to the to what the group is, but I thought it'd be nice to actually have it at the beginning of one of our audios. We call it an insight meditation group. So what is what is an insight meditation group? That may mean a whole bunch of different things to different people. It's in the Buddhist tradition, it's known as vipassana. The translation of the word is, we usually call it insight meditation in English. And you can look at it as a way of reducing stress in your life and awakening to your true nature. Quite simply, a way of reducing suffering or stress in your life and a way of awakening to your true nature. And it's premised on two simple observations. First, when we experience stress, we're in some way resisting reality, either by trying to hold on to an experience that we like or trying to push away an experience that we don't like. So that's the first premise. That causes stress in our lives. And the second one is that by paying attention and being present, we can have peace and more peace and easefulness in our lives. So two fairly simple observations. And it's based on, we practice how to be present and how to investigate. The being present part is what I was talking about at the beginning of the little bit of guiding meditation that I gave, is just being with what is. So it's this bare attention, it's sometimes called, or bare awareness. And what it's bare of is judging, analyzing, criticizing, speculating, fantasizing, you know, all those things that the mind likes to jump in and do. So it's just bare attention to what's arising moment to moment, bare of all those things I just mentioned. In particular, judging. We judge what happens. I don't know. If you look back at the sitting you just had, was there a judging mind? You know, were things happening in the meditation that the mind was in saying, well, that's not supposed to happen. This is a meditation. I'm not supposed to have a mind that's thinking all these things. I'm not supposed to feel restless and want to move around. That's the judging mind. What's arising is just a mind that's thinking a lot. Nothing big about that. But then the suffering comes when you then judge it, criticize yourself for doing that, perhaps saying, well, I'm not a very good meditator, obviously. Maybe I should just leave now. All those judgments that then we pile onto it. So that's the being present part. And then the second is investigation. It's through this seeing. So I can tell you that this causes suffering. But when you actually investigate your own experience, you can see for yourself that when you resist reality, either by pushing away what you don't want to experience or holding on to what you do want to experience, that there is stress in your life. So you see this in your daily life. You see that you exacerbate stress in your life with those judgments and those thought patterns. And you also see that when you let go of that, there's more peacefulness and easefulness in your life. So that's insight meditation. It's not based on there's not a belief system that you need to adhere to or adopt in order to practice this. It's rather a way for you to see for yourself if it's true that holding on and pushing away experience leads to stress. So although it's based on the teachings of the Buddha, you don't have to be a Buddhist to do these practices. They're universally available teachings, regardless of what your spiritual tradition might be. So that's that's what we practice here. And although I say that, you know, we're based in insight meditation and we're connected to True North Insight, which is a insight meditation group that offers retreats and which is connected to Insight Meditation Society and Spirit Rock in the United States. So there's roots that go back through tradition. We're also fairly eclectic here in that you'll hear me talk about other spiritual traditions. The way I see it, there's something at the top. Picture a mountain and something at the top that we might call truth. And we're all going up. Going up this mountain just to find that thing on the top that we call truth. And we're all on perhaps different paths, and each path could be a different spiritual tradition. And about, I don't know, let's say 3/4 of the way up, we all look around, and so we all have very distinct systems, right? Methods of practice and so forth, scriptures, suttas, and so on. About 3/4 of the way up, we look around and go, hey, we're all saying the same thing. And that truth is the same. There's just different paths leading to it. So for that reason, I think we can draw in a variety of different words, and even practices from different spiritual traditions. So welcome to our Insight Meditation Wednesday night sitting group. And what I'd like to talk about tonight is opening to the present moment, something that's very basic to Insight Meditation. The other thing I'd like to do is, we tried this last week and it seemed to work fairly well, is that I invite you to jump in with questions as I'm talking. One thing about this group is we don't really follow rules strictly if something else works. Like, you know, wear shoes if you want to wear shoes. Wear shoes. Somebody said they were more comfortable. So it's, although these might be rules in other settings, here we tend to kind of go with what helps us in our practice. And we tried the jumping in with questions, and it seemed to, for the people that were here, it seemed to kind of have a resonance that was helpful. So I'm willing to go with that. Because sometimes a question comes right in that moment that you would like to explore, and we can do that. And we have this little tradition that before you ask the question, you go like this, and then when you finish, you go like this. And everybody acknowledges you by going like this. That's just so we know when you're finished. You may have to do a little more than that to get my attention when I'm talking. You may have to go like this first and then like this. Because when I get rolling, sometimes I don't see those subtle movements. So I'm going to start with a quote from a teacher you might have heard of, who we call the Buddha. About present moment and opening to the present moment. The secret of health for both mind and body is not to mourn for the past, worry about the future, or anticipate troubles, but to live in the present moment wisely and earnestly. And of course, that's not the only quote where the Buddha talks about the present moment. And I know when I was new to these teachings, a question I had, I think it might have been in the very first Insight Meditation retreat I went to, was, what's so special about the present moment? It's all this present moment stuff, you know. What's there that we need to pay attention to? So that's what I thought I'd talk about tonight. And it sounds so simple, right? To be in the present moment. You know, you hear those words, you think, oh, that sounds pretty. You may think, well, what could be easier? I'm here in this moment, I can pay attention to it. As you explore it, you may find it's a little more challenging to open to the moment and be present with whatever is happening. It's the whatever is happening part. And try it for yourself next time you're brushing your teeth, or having a shower, or, I mean, you don't even have to the experiment you might have just had, even just the walking in the circle. How was it challenging or easy to be just present with the walking? Or was the mind off thinking about this or that or the other thing? So we know that we discover that it is difficult. It is difficult to be present. And it seems, when you think about it, it seems a little bit strange. And also, when you sort of think like this present moment is our life. That's what our life is what's happening in the present moment. The thought that we have about a past moment is just a recollection, a memory, partial, perhaps even inaccurate, based on the research that's been done about memories of the past. Any thoughts about the future is, again, just a thought, a fantasy, or a speculation of these thoughts in the mind. What's the thing that's real in our lives is what's happening now in each moment of our lives. So that, in a sense, makes it very precious. And paying attention to it also allows us to be... it heightens the experience. This really came... I really saw this in other people. Saw other people realize this, and it was quite astonishing to me how quickly people realized it was this raisin exercise. I don't know if you've ever done the raisin exercise. It's part of mindfulness-based stress reduction. You basically eat a raisin very, very slowly. You look at it, look at the crevices and the creases and the color and how the light shimmers off it, and you're really with that raisin, and focusing all your attention on that raisin. And then the eating of it, the taste, and the saliva being just activated in your mouth, and how the flavor shifts in different parts of your mouth, and just really being with the experience. And what people report, and without exception, really, is that, wow, they never knew what a raisin tasted like. Like, this is never been with an experience like that. So the whole experience was heightened and enhanced, just a simple act of being with that present moment experience. So, why we're continually told in insight meditation to be in the present moment, open to whatever is happening in the present moment. It's a key to mindfulness. Be mindful. We're mindful of the present moment. We're not mindful of the past or the future. It's mindful of what's arising in the present moment. And we're also told that mindfulness is the most direct way to happiness, to awareness, presence. So why is it so challenging? That's the question that arises for some, is why is this so challenging? I know when I first started meditating, I'd sit there and go, when I first heard it, oh, that sounds pretty simple. I'll sit here and I'll follow my breath for a while, and then I'll just open to whatever arises, thoughts, sounds, kind of choiceless awareness. How hard can that be, right? And wow, is it challenging? The mind, the thoughts, the mind produces are just, endless. Just on and on and on. And I found some sittings, it was just, that instruction I gave of, you can do one of two things. You can hold your attention on an object, right? And I mentioned the breath, the breath on the nose or the abdomen rising. So that's, one focused attention. Or you can open your awareness to just allowing whatever arises. So that's called choiceless awareness, as opposed to one-pointed awareness. So regardless of which one you're doing, when the mind wanders off and starts following a train of thought, the instruction always is when you notice it, gently, kindly, firmly, bring your mind back to either the open awareness or the one-pointed awareness, and congratulate yourself for having noticed. And that's because that's a moment of mindfulness. So that's a happy moment. It's actually a blessing that you noted that something happened, that you went, you know, the mind went, something in the mind noticed that the mind was lost on a train of thought. So that's really a blessing. It's not like, oh my God, how long have I been lost over there thinking about this and that. And the other thing, really, it's like, wow, okay, there's a blessing. I bring it back. It's a moment of mindfulness. This is what it's all about, and I'll just, you know, begin anew and do the practice. So it comes also with some compassion towards ourselves. And I thought, how difficult can this be? And found it was quite challenging. There were times when I just wanted to jump off that cushion and, you know, run and scream and, you know, not practice. We also may find that mindfulness is cumulative. So the more you do it, the easier it is to be present with what's happening in our meditation and in our daily life. So you can just notice a thought. You know, crazy thoughts. I was just skiing on the weekend, and there's thoughts that come up in the mind were just, you know, bizarre. Like, well, you know, thoughts about other skiers. Why we're not going fast enough, or now we're going too fast. There aren't enough moguls. Oh, there's too much, you know, too many, you know. It's just the mind was just always kind of this judging pattern going on. Of course, the mind can fixate and start building a whole story around that if you're not conscious of those thoughts just coming and going. So each moment of mindfulness builds our capacity to be mindful. So each moment you notice that the mind's got lost and you bring it back, it builds mindfulness. Each moment of mindfulness deconditions the greed, hatred, and delusion, or greed, ill will, and delusion in our minds, and strengthens our capacity to be present. So you could look at your practices accumulating the maximum number of mindful moments per minute. So that's just the maximum number of mindful moments you can have per minute throughout your day, whether you're sitting, formal practice, or whether you're just going about your day. You can look at your practice that way. So what gets in the way? I better get to the topic. What gets in the way of opening to the moment? First of all, it goes against all our conditioning. Our instinct is to grasp onto what we want, right? To attach to it, and to run away from, push away. That's our instinct, to push away what we don't want, to unpleasant feeling tones. And they can be different for everyone. What you find pleasant can be different than what I find pleasant and what you find unpleasant. It's based on the environment conditioning of your life and your genetics. There's no basis in any reality, in a sense. It's what's we all see the world differently. So, but it goes against our instincts to do this. To be present. Our instinct is kicks in of wanting more or wanting less. So that's the first, it's a deconditioning process in a way. So the four challenges that I'd like to talk about are forgiveness as the antidote for wanting things to be different. Patience is the antidote for wanting things to change. And letting go is the antidote for holding on to fixed agendas. And humor is the antidote for taking things personally. So forgiveness, patience, letting go, and humor. There's four things you could bring to your practice to help address the challenges that arise in opening to the present moment. All so very useful practices. So I'll just go through each one as quick as I can, given how fast the time seems to go. So forgiveness. Mother Teresa said, if we really want to love, we must learn to forgive. Forgiveness is so central to many spiritual traditions, in particular the Christian tradition. In terms of our practice, wishing for things to be different, or wishing we were different, it causes suffering. And this quality of forgiveness can counter this, wanting things to be different. It's kind of the antidote to the complaining mind. Wanting things in the past to be different in particular. Wanting your history to be different. Forgiveness is the antidote to it. And this is forgiveness towards yourself, forgiveness towards oneself, forgiveness towards others, and forgiveness towards life. So here's an exercise. When you're meditating and your mind wanders, what is your relationship to that wandering? Is it one of forgiveness? How do you relate to that mind wandering? Is it one of scolding yourself? Feeling frustrated? The act of forgiveness to the wandering mind is a practice of opening to the moment. We kind of looked at the mind as a child that doesn't know better in this case, and scolding it's not going to help. So you're basically giving it firm but loving direction, bringing it back to the present moment. So explore that. Look at what your relationship to that wandering mind, the mind that fixates on something arises, and rather than just noticing it in the present moment and letting it fade, so the mother story or the story of the neighbor or the story of somebody so-and-so comes up, rather than just noticing it, oh, there it is, letting it go. The mind fixates on it and you're on the thought train. So just notice what happens, if there's a sense of forgiveness or a frustration that arises when that happens. So it's forgiveness towards oneself. Do memories of past events, mistakes, things you wish you did differently, prevent you or keep you from opening to the present moment? Those things arise. I know I've had meditations where for a while I had this sense that I always had to be generous and compassionate, right? A Dharma teacher. So I should be generous and compassionate all the time, right? I had that thought pattern. So when I would do things, and it could be the smallest thing, like somebody came, would come over to have a quick chat, and I would forget to offer them food, and then they'd say what they wanted to say. We'd have our chat, and they'd leave, and then like, oh, I'm so unthoughtful, I didn't even offer them food or a glass of a coffee, or because we were all engaged in the conversation, of course, but that there wasn't a forgiveness in that way. It would come up, and I could have a sitting meditation where I could sit, and that thought would just keep coming up and pulling my attention away. So it could be very small, but it's a memory of the past. Something I saw as, that arose as a mistake, or something I wish was different. It's keeping me from opening to the now what's happening in the present moment. So can we open to our humanness to just allow the present moment? Open to forgiving our own experience And of course, the more we can forgive ourselves, the more we are able to bring forgiveness to others in life. We begin by practicing forgiveness for ourselves, and that allows us to bring forgiveness to others in our life. And this is a very basic part of mindfulness. A very key part of mindfulness. Especially for those of us who memories of the past and mistakes of the past are what prevent us from being in the present moment. When I say that, if you go, oh, that's me, that's my personality, that's my, you know, then forgiveness practice can be a very key practice for you. And there's forgiveness meditations, you Google it and you can get, there's forgiveness, there's all kinds of resources available to you. And of course, if you have a question, feel free to ask me. Sometimes the general literature that we get can be helpful, but sometimes the issue that you're dealing with is very precise. So you need somebody, you talk to somebody that can give more precise direction. And of course, you benefit from forgiveness. People that forgive more have fewer health problems, feel less stress. There's a lot of research on forgiveness out there. If you're interested in that, look at the Stanford Research Center. They have a forgiveness center there at Stanford, and they do research on forgiveness. And amazing results that they've found. To quote Desmond Tutu, to forgive is the highest form of self-interest. I need to forgive so that my anger and resentment and lust for revenge do not corrode my own being. From Desmond Tutu. I need to forgive so that my anger and resentment and lust for revenge do not corrode my own being. So we practice forgiveness for our own sake so that we're kind of not locked into that anger, fear, resentment. It can harden us and narrow our options for responding to life. So it's important. So if the past is a challenge, thoughts about the past that you kind of dwell on prevents you from opening to the moment, then acknowledging that and adopting a forgiveness practice. Seeing that people are you're doing the best you can, and everybody else is doing the best they can, based on the causes and conditions of their life and their genetics. A quote from Jesus. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. But if you love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back, then your reward will be great. So Jesus and the Buddha were kind of saying, the similar things around the importance of forgiveness. And neither one can really accuse. So forgiveness doesn't mean inaction. Neither one can accuse either the Buddha or Jesus of being cowardly in the face of injustice. They were fairly, very upfront about skillfully confronting injustice. Therefore, the teachings are really about how to hold the difficulties in your heart, not about inaction. Holding the difficulties in your heart and broadening your options to respond skillfully. So if you find yourself wanting some historical movement to be different, ask yourself, what needs forgiving right now? If you find there's a moment where you want history to be different, ask yourself what needs forgiving right now. could be towards yourself, towards someone else, or towards life. Then you could ask yourself, well, what's the payoff for holding on to this? Maybe you think you need to hold on. Ask yourself, what would you need to understand in order to come to terms with it? So there may be a broader process. One thing I've talked about here in the past is I'm a firm believer in, engaging Western psychology and so forth and working through some of the resentments that we might hold and how that can be an integral part of our spiritual practice as well. Yeah.
Forgiveness is sort of odd. I would say that it's hard to have forgive someone. You're either forgiven or sort of the transition of some other state. So I'm curious as to what the issue would be about someone asking forgiveness and you really aren't there yet. You haven't really forgiven them. You say you forgive them and folks that haven't asked your own forgiveness, or but it's also a lie in the sense that you really don't feel forgiveness. And I'm just curious as to this process of forgiveness is takes a time usually. But during that time you're not really fully forgiven your own person, you're holding pools of negative emotions and your hate whatever. I'm just wondering, in some sense, how do you get through that part in the transition when you're dealing and you need to deal with someone who is seeking forgiveness?
So the key there, I guess, is the it's forgiving another person, and the other person is asking at the same time for forgiveness. And what do you do in the transition process of when you're working through what you're holding on to? There's still some holding on that's going on. Depends on the context, of course, and it could, depending on what the relationship with the other person is, it could be you could be open about that if you think it would be helpful to your process and to the other, to the person's process. Or as you say, you might just say, I'm still working through it. I'm not quite there yet. Could be just a simple statement. I'm hoping someday I will be able to forgive. I would avoid the lying part, not just because it's generally, an unskillful. It could probably get one in more difficulties because it's not bringing honesty to the relationship and where it's at. Yeah. But what you raise in terms of it being a process is important. It's not like we can snap our fingers and you hear this Dharma talk and now you're gonna forgive everything. I did a lot of work on this stuff over years, where you write down the resentments that you're holding on to. There's courses where you do these kinds of things, and then you set the intention to really explore and look at each of those resentments, looking at the stress and suffering that holding on to them brings to your life. And looking at how forgiveness might evolve within that relationship. The people don't even need to even be still alive, and you can hold resentments for people that are dead, passed away. So it is a process, and as I said, there might be other resources that you bring to working through those deep resentments that are there that require forgiveness. The next one is patience. Now this is keeps us from opening to the moment in hopes that things will change. so that the future will be different. The next moment will be better than this moment. Right now I want it to happen. So it's not about the past, it's about the future. Thinking if I wait long enough, the next moment's going to be, it's going to get better. And so the antidote for this is patience. Can you be in the moment as change naturally occurs? Allowing change to naturally occur. Because one of the things that we've explored is impermanence, that things will inevitably, things do change. So whatever moment you're experiencing, it won't be the next moment won't be the same as the moment you just experience. So patience is about waiting for things to change, not wanting things to change, but waiting for things to change. It's about dropping into this moment and letting things be as they are. So, boredom may be something that arises in your day or in your practice. A sense of boredom may arise, and you'll want things to be different. You may want things are not just stimulating enough. You're bored while you're meditating. Sitting cross-legged on the floor for your 45-minute morning meditation, and suddenly the thought may arise, this is boring. Why am I doing this? I could be watching TV, reading a book. And so that sense of wanting things to be different in that moment can arise. We often want lots of things to happen now. We want the now to be like things happening and happening all the time. Getting to the next thing. I saw in a parenting magazine an ad for some gadget that helped teach your kids to read before they're born. So wanting your kids, you know, for parents that want their kids to be born with an increased capacity to read. So not even waiting till they're, I thought, well, that's really wanting things to happen now. Like this is, so to me that had a sound of perhaps impatience. Here's from T.S. Eliot from the Four Quartets. I said to my soul, "Be still and wait." Without hope, for hope would be hope for the wrong thing. Wait without love, for love would be the love of the wrong thing. There is yet faith, but the faith and the love are all in the waiting. Wait without thought, for you are not ready for thought, so the darkness shall be light, and the stillness like dancing. So sometimes we think that patience is, if we wait long enough, then something better is going to happen. And so I've heard it said that Suzuki Roshi, Zen teacher, always said that maybe patience isn't the right word to use in this context of it being a challenge to opening to the moment. Perhaps the word is constancy. A willingness to be present with what is again and again. Just this constant willingness, constancy, willingness to be present with what is again and again. The presence of mindfulness. Learning to be present with what is. Here's a Rumi poem. Rumi's a Sufi Islamic poet within the Sufi tradition. Long passed away. A friend remarks to the Prophet, Why is it I get screwed in business deals? It's like a spell. I become distracted by business talk and make wrong decisions. Muhammad replies, stipulate with every transaction that you need 3 days to make sure. Deliberation is one of the qualities of God. Throw a dog a bit of something, he sniffs to see if he wants it. Be that careful. Sniff with your wisdom nose. Be clear, then decide. The universe came into being gradually over 6 days. God could have commanded, just be. Creation usually unfolds like calm breakers. So can we let life unfold like calm breakers, allowing what arises? Now I have to come clean. Patience is the one I've worked on a lot. You think I have the forgiveness stories? I have lots of patience stories. The personality that came about here was, and to some degree still is, but it's definitely moderated tremendously. I think so patience is one of those things. I had a teacher, and I've said this many times here, that got to know this mind a little bit, and said there's a patience practice I'd like you to engage in. And I said, so whatever you say, you're the teacher. He said, I want you to go to the supermarket on a Saturday. Actually, he asked me to go every day for a month. This was my practice. Go to the supermarket and pick up an item. It doesn't matter what it is. And get in the longest line and observe what's arising in your body, what's arising in thoughts and body sensations. And notice contractions, and when you get to the cash, if there's still contractions going on and thoughts of impatience, then go back to another line and just continue to do this until there's nothing more to notice. And then if you don't have to buy the thing, you can put it back on the shelf, or if you really need it, buy it and take it home. But do this every day. And wow, it really, it's really getting to know the arising of impatience. I mean, he began by asking me what happens when you go to the supermarket and you're in a real hurry and, there's big lineups, and I get all anxious and contracted and even a little angry at times. And so that's where the practice came from. So that was practicing with patience. So, it's wanting things to change, wanting things to be different. Short line, not a long line. Get my stuff and get out of there, because I've got more moments I want to engage in. Not really. What a place to practice. A lineup in a perhaps a stimulating environment, but it doesn't. Our practice doesn't have to be in a still environment. It can be anywhere. So, I've been accused. I had one when I was teaching an MBSR course. I listened to your talks online, and you sound so calm. And when I'm teaching these MBSR teacher trainings, I get fairly excitable, and there's lots going on, right? And I'm running around doing stuff. And she said, "I thought you'd be this calm presence all the time, but you're running around like an Italian shoe salesperson." Just like running around and doing things. So there's underneath impatience, there can be a fear of losing time, not having enough time to get through all the material I want to get through in the MBSR course. The opposite of what I've discovered is the opposite of patience. It's not necessarily impatience, but not contentment. If you're content with the present moment, that's what the practice is. it's okay. And when you think about it, being bored, being a lack of stimulation, what is peace? I mean, you don't, like I've said, you don't have necessarily need stillness. You can practice with stimulation. But really, the most peaceful moments of our practice tend to come when there's stillness, lack of stimulation. So what a better time to really touch into that stillness when there isn't all that stimulation. When that sense of boredom might arise, maybe this is a time to really practice. Rather than looking for stimulation, you could go, oh, I can take this opportunity to take this stillness, to really engage with it and be with it and see what arises in the stillness. So that's one of the most profound attitudes we can have in our practice. This notion of contentment, letting go of wanting things to be different than they are. So profound for this practice. Ram Dass, a Hindu/Buddhist teacher, said that contentment is plumbing the depths of each moment. Plumbing the depths of each moment. So boredom is just a lack of attention in some way. We're not plumbing the depths of, we're not looking deeply enough into the richness of that moment. It's not like there's nothing going on. There's zillions of things going on in the body alone, emotionally, cognitively, around the environment. Smells are always, there's so much that we're unconscious of. There's lots going on. That's what he means by plumbing the depths of the moment, really being with the depth of the moment. So we can look at every moment, we can open and look at to see what's there, what can be appreciated. The third one is letting go of agendas. Now this is ideas and beliefs about what is happening or should be happening. All kinds of ideas may arise. Particularly this comes up when we're trying to figure things out, trying to engage the mind to figure out what our practice should be and what should be happening in the present moment. And with this, there's generally a contraction. So it's letting go of this agenda of trying to figure things out. Sometimes, you know, we call it beginners, again, referring back to Suzuki Roshi. I refer to him a lot because I really respect him deeply as a teacher. Coined the phrase beginner's mind. So coming to each moment with that freshness, like a child almost come, you know, if you can think of how a child comes to each moment, a child would look at this and would be fascinated by it. They'd look at the shape and the smoothness and the texture and wonder how, you know, it'd be a, so just coming to each moment with that freshness, that beginner's mind. Insights, and this is called insight meditation, insights cannot arise when the thinking mind is engaged. I got a few quizzical looks there, which is good. So insight's not about trying to figure things out. I credit Rocky for my dog, my Eskipoo, half poodle, half American Eskimo dog, with the big insights in my spiritual growth. Because one Well, the big one for me was when I was picking up dog poo with, you know, the inside out bag in my hand, and I was bending down. So there was no thinking going on that in that moment. And I think I've had other people report it's not when we're trying to figure things out that insights arise. They can't arise. It's when we're just when we're with the moment. So can we engage in our practice without trying to figure things out? Stop in the moment and ask ourselves, what is true right now? Not trying to figure it out, just opening it to it the moment as it is, as it's here for you. Not trying to figure anything out. Not engaging the cognitive mind. Doesn't mean we don't use the mind. We use the mind a lot in terms of planning, and we still do all those things. But in terms of our spiritual practice and our practice of mindfulness and being in the present moment, you can actually engage. This may be getting. There's ways to engage in use of the cognitive mind in a way of letting go, which is doing what needs to be done in that moment, which may involve using the cognitive mind, of course, but not trying to figure out, what the present moment is. Just being open to it. All kinds of ideas and assessments about the present moment may arise, limiting beliefs, and letting go of those mind games that you impose on yourself, and just be with what is. Just imagine what it'd be like if you saw all these ideas that arise in your meditation as just mental formations with no basis in fact. Or secretions of the mind. Just secretions of the mind, with no basis in fact, no more real than the sounds that are appearing to ear consciousness. The thoughts have no more basis in fact to mind consciousness as the sounds do to ear consciousness. Just be looking at, just be sitting with them as if that's all it is, just mental formations arising, passing away. And the final one is humor. So not taking your experience personally can help you open to the present moment. It reminds me of In the sutras and Buddhist teachings, they talk about the three marks of existence. And just quickly, I mean, there's a whole other talk on that, but the three marks of existence are that they're, being human involved, as there's suffering that arises. Different types of suffering is one of the marks of existence. The second one is impermanence, that things are constantly changing. And the third one is there's no independent essence that you could call a self, that this is all happening to. Anicca, anatta, and dukkha. So the way Jon Kabat-Zinn has reformed those for kind of universal consumption is shit happens, things change, and don't take it personally. And humor, bringing humor to it, really is about not taking... Not taking our experience personally. Can we get lost in our practice, you know, fumble around in it? And can we say, you know, you can say to yourself, I'm here again. You kind of laugh sometimes. Well, you just do. If you watch the mind enough, you laugh. Because you just think, how can that be that same thought comes up, you know, over and over again, and I, you know, you think it's lost its juice because you've watched it arise, like, you know, 347 times or whatever it might be. You think it's, and then you're sitting there next week and there it is again. Wow. Amazing. So they're not taking it personally, just noticing it and holding it lightly with a sense of humor. It can really support our practice. So you can kind of be in on the joke rather than being a butt of the joke. In other words, lighten up and don't take what happens so personally. And if you do take it personally, what's next? Forgiveness and compassion, right? So if you did, because you might take it personally, but you can always forgive, bring compassion to the practice and begin anew. So you can even, that can even be part of the compassion for how easy it is to get caught. How easy it is to get caught. And know that you're not alone in this. When you teach an introduction to meditation class and you tell people to go away for a week and meditate every day for 45 minutes, they all come back and they're all sitting at home going, I suck. And they all come back and report, if they're open enough, you know, to report it, that, this was really hard and just, I thought I was terrible at it. But then they see everybody else had the same experience, they realize they're not alone in this. They were taking it personally. So after that, after a while, and I usually joke about it, if somebody will come clean on it, and I'll say, wow, I think you might be the only person I've ever heard that's happened to. And then I'll, you know, they kind of go, what? Then I let them in, you know, that everybody, you know, experience the same thing. So not taking it personally, and you're not alone in this. So forgiveness and patience, letting go, and bringing a sense of humor to the practice are all available to help to you to open to the present moment. As anecdotes, you could say, to wanting things to be different, wanting things to change, having fixed ideas about how things should be, and taking things personally. So those are all kind of antidotes to those challenges. So any questions, comments?
Do you bring humor to your practice when you, if you take yourself, well, if one takes themselves seriously, and you know, it's like a continuous cycle of compassion, forgiveness, and then, so how do you bring humor into the practice in order to lighten up?
So it's like how to do it. I guess it's they're all invitations to bring an attitude to the practice. So there isn't a sense of humor meditation that I could offer. Maybe there is. I mean, maybe I've seen everything out there, so maybe there is. But like there is a forgiveness, and there are. But in terms of a practice for bringing a sense of humor to it, is you could look in your practice for when you see a sense of self arising, a sense of a personal, you know, that you're taking this personally, and just, you know, see if you can lighten up around it, and maybe laugh a little about it, and just see if that shifts the. Shifts the challenge, the difficulty. Yeah. It's just practicing with it, I think, with the sense of humor. In a way, sometimes it arises naturally, too. If you meditate enough, you'll start to see how, you know, what you took personally is actually so impersonal that you kind of laugh. Like, how could I, you know, it's kind of... For me, it was naturally humorous. Yeah. time's running out. I'll just close by by saying that the although we all experience these challenges in our practice, and I think you've likely seen each one of them arise in your own practice. Some of us may be a little more oriented towards one than the other. So for me, it was wanting things to change. So patience. So for you, it might be one of the other aspects. And to really investigate what for you is the primary challenge, and to acknowledge it. Investigate, acknowledge, and begin to look and to address it. So begin to practice forgiveness, or to practice patience, or to practice letting go of fixed ideas, or to practice bringing a sense of humor, letting go of the sense of taking it personally. There's other practices that we can look at. So your question about sense of humor is very key, because that's not just what we do to address the taking it personally. There's whole practices that address the four aggregates, and looking at what makes up a self. And again, a topic for many different talks. But so looking at investigating, acknowledging which of the challenges you're facing, and what are the practices that might help. Because this idea of opening to the present moment is so critical to the practice. It's basically what mindfulness is. It's what awareness is. It's opening to the present moment. Bare attention, non-judgmentally. And on purpose, with intention, in other words. So we have an intention to be present. It's presence, it's awareness. It's the basis of the practice. So it's very, I can't emphasize enough the importance of addressing these aspects, the forgiveness and patience and letting go and sense of humor. So thank you for your attention, and nice to meet the new folks that came, and hope to see you again.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.